What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
This week on the Legion Clubhouse, there's a crisis going on, but we don't know why.
Legion of Superheroes, Volume 3, Number 18. The Return of the Infinite Man. Published January 1986. Written by Paul Levitz with art by Greg LaRocque and Larry Malstedt. Synopsis. Has anyone noticed there's a crisis going on?
Matthew, the crisis has finally hit the future.
Yes, we forgot all about it, but apparently it's been going on all along.
And apparently there are Legion members who have been part of the crisis on Infinite Earth, but even they don't remember why they were involved or why Psycho Kid. Everyone remembers Psycho Kid, right? I mean,
Kid Psycho,
right? I mean, Kid is Psycho. That his name or is that not his name?
His name is Kid Psycho.
Are we sure? I don't remember.
Yes.
I don't remember. And apparently neither does anyone else.
Well, they remember that he exists. They don't remember that he died. Kid Psycho actually died in Legion, in Crisis on Infinite Earths number 3, but Dawnstar of the Legion was one of the initial recruits to the Monitor's first small strike force in Crisis on Infinite Earths number 1. And there was actually a big sequence there where we saw the Legion in action. The Monitor's secondary, the Harbinger, showed up and stole Dawnstar away, and the Legion went, oh gosh, what the who and the what? But they've forgotten it all.
Yeah, that's weird.
It is. And of course, the reason why is hashtag time travel shenanigans.
I guess. I mean, there is some interesting things that are going on in here. First of all, you look at this ripple effect of things are happening around them. Tachyon Galtos is being destroyed, or Tachron Galios is being destroyed, but no one can remember why. It's kind of like Marty McFly fading out because, you know, he prevented his parents from getting married, which is interesting because Back to the Future comes out right before Crisis on Infinite Earths. And even though these have been going on for a while, this kind of concept of being slowly erased from history is fascinating simply because that implies that time is linear and not instantaneous. And so it takes time for things to have an impact down the road as opposed to being instantaneous. So I find that very interesting that both of these, the comics and Back to the Future, are both looking at time in a very linear fashion.
Well, the Legion has had some time travel stories before that do imply that if you're traveling in time and something weird happens, you can be unaffected. Because if you remember the wedding of Lightning Lad and Saturn Girl, that we saw actually wasn't the one from the prime reality. It had to be one from an alternate reality where EarthGov was this weird, crazy fascist organization. And then Superboy went forward in time, and because he was traveling, blah, 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 fish cakes. But this story actually does explain, or at least kind of sort of halfway explains, why the Legion specifically was not as affected. And it was actually because of something that they did way, way back in issue 235 when they trapped the Infinite Man in the timeline. And so the Infinite Man was cycling back and forth through his own life. And apparently that's what held off the crisis.
But people are still forgetting stuff. At least the crisis impacting the Time Institute. That's there. And could it be the Time Institute behind all this? No, it's the children who are wrong. There's a couple of things that I find interesting in here. Ron Vidar is back, and of course, he is the target of the Infinite Man's fury.
Right.
But
because Infinite Man blames Ron for his predicament.
But Ron Vidar seems to have a much better grasp of what has happened in the past and why it's slipping away, or why, he sees universes and realities being destroyed. I wonder if the future hadn't been erased in this case, I wonder if Ron Vidar could have become a psycho pirate type character, one of the few that remember the events of the crisis.
It's an interesting thought. And I think that as we go through this issue, Rond is the first one to notice, because Rond is always at the Time Institute. Rond lives there. And whatever the time beacon that Brainiac 5 and Circadius Ennius built is, it seems to be at least part of the reason why Ron's mind is working. And I do like the fact that this gives Rond almost a superpower. Because, as you know, Kid Psycho was one of the Legion, the honorary Legionnaires. They're secondary members.
I don't remember him at all.
Yeah, Kid
Psycho. It's almost like he's been erased from my memory.
Superboy's best friends, Lana and Pete, and Rond Vidar, who has never had superpowers. And it's kind of a shame, you know? It's too bad that nobody ever gave Rond superpowers.
Fortunately,
my friend. It's your important literary technique.
The other thing, as we see Brainiac starting to crack, which again makes me ask that question, is it his DNA forcing him to go a little weird, or and become quote unquote evil, or is it just his nature to become evil because he's a Brainiac?
I feel like this one is that argument of computer versus man in the computer man, because most of his anguish seems to be focused on the death of Supergirl, which we actually see.
And we talked about before. Therapy dude.
Yeah.
Therapy dude.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the thing. Remember, his relationship with her was never what either of them wanted it to be. And back in Superboy and the Legion, I think 204, you may remember, he built a robot Supergirl to be his super girlfriend, because he could not deal with how weird.
Because that's not creepy at all.
But this is the thing. He's a 12th level intellect. He's all about the brains. And this is emotions. And I feel like he's got nothing with emotions. He's got friends with the Legion. He's more comfortable than most Kaluans. By the way, if you mix a little Kaluan and coffee, oh, that's so good. But he's more comfortable than most of his robot people with the idea of emotions. But this is the third or fourth time in the last four or five episodes that we've seen Brainiac just devolve into tears, just crying and crying and crying because of something that he can't understand or feel or process. And to a degree, it's honestly kind of fun, because it does give him sort of a kryptonite. You know, his kryptonite is the feelings. Brainiac 5 is a super brain. Nothing can stop him except if he gets in his feels.
There's a, I don't know if it's a true story or not, but apparently during Galaxy Quest, after one kind of intense scene, Tim Allen was like, I don't feel right. I need to go sort this out in my trailer. And then Hans Gruber was like, oh my God, I think he just experienced acting for the first time. Right. He was really, really getting into the character and didn't know how to process that. And was like, I need to take a break. And Snape was just like, oh, no, he just experienced acting. So,
and you can hear him saying that in his voice, too.
The other thing that I find, again, we talked about this in the last episode. Mm-hmm. It feels like we are getting a greatest hits of some of the greatest villains in Legion lore, because last time, who did we have? We had Time Trapper, right? We had the Time Trapper in that Legion bit. And now we're seeing the Infinite Man, which I don't know if I would consider the Infinite Man a major villain for the Legion.
I think that if you're ranking in terms of power, absolutely, he's right.
No, I'm just talking about, I would put Mordru ahead of the Infinite Man.
Oh, Oh, absolutely. Honestly, I would put Pulsar Stargrave ahead of the Infinite Man if you're talking
about
actual impact.
And it feels weird that we're dedicating something to the Infinite Man, maybe because he's, you know, keeping the Time Institute intact with his time travel shenanigans. But it just feels like as the universe is about to be rebooted through the crisis event that DC is doing, it just feels like, hey, guys, if you want to bring a villain forward in whatever comes next, make sure you introduce them in crisis or during this time period over the next year so that people remember these characters so that you can see what they become after the crisis. Because not only do we get the Time Trapper and the Infinite Man, now we're releasing all of the Fatal Five for some reason and giving them their weapons back.
Well, the Fatal Five are being held on Takron Geltos.
Yeah.
And the Legion does not want even the Fatal Five, even Validus, to die.
Yeah.
And so they are trying to free them and get them to...
And so what does Dawnstar do? She takes his axe and then immediately flings it back at him as he's being sucked up into the ship. Why are you giving them back their weapons? Why are you doing this?
She's trying to hit him with it.
I know. Why would you do that?
Because she's not the brightest bulb at the bottom of the barrel. Have you not noticed?
It makes no sense to do that, even if he is being sucked up by a transporter beam, because obviously the atomic axe can slice through a transporter beam. Just give everybody back their thing, even with even as the planet is falling and Telos accidentally unleashes Validus. It's like, oh, okay, why don't you just get him out of the cage, too, so that the only thing we're missing here is the Emerald Eye and Manos Hands of Fate. And then the Fatal Five are all back together again.
If you notice, though, the Validus thing is a different setup, because when Validus leaves, he does not leave in a teleport.
No, he leaves in a boom tube.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some Validus stuff. But I don't remember now if we've gotten to the beginning of the Validus stuff. I know we got the first part of the curse.
Yeah, we had the babies being born, and then we're leading up to Validus is the baby. We also see, because this crisis is so wacky, we actually see the first appearance of Marvel Comics' The Spot in this issue. There's a whole bunch of them trying to attack the Legion of Superheroes, which is weird, but just something that I noticed. Also, Jaxxon lives. Again, a really weird thing that Jaxxon was over at Marvel and Star Wars, and people were like, Jaxxon, we don't really like this character. Let's get rid of him. And then DC brings him back alive. Yep, that's how it works. I don't know. I'm not 100% sold on this as a crisis tie-in comic.
I feel like this really is, you know, we've been calling them housekeeping issues. This is a big crisis explosion housekeeping issue. And it really is an, okay, how do we explain why the Legion has for the last, year and a half now, not been affected by the crisis? And it really does come down to, hey, we've got this Infinite Man that we can play with. We've got somebody with time travel built into, you know, baked into the crust of their villainousness. And I feel like that's really what this comes to. This is, let's make sure that this is an issue that explains, first of all, why the crisis has been going on without affecting the future, because, as you mentioned, they should remember this. Everything that happened in the future, everything that happened in the crisis, rather, should be history to the Legion in the future. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, how when you look back, you're not supposed to look back in time, and there's this whole missing gap time that at some point gets explained. It would be interesting that, there's a reason why nobody remembers the crisis, because that's been blacked out from all the history tapes or whatever that's been going on. And I don't know. For everything that the crisis was trying to do, they have DC, you know, 30 years, 40 years later, has totally retreated on all of that and really understands that, a multiverse is necessary and a multiverse is needed. But even while they're trying to clean up this mess, it feels like when we read an issue like issue 18 here, that they still don't really know what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure at the time. I'm sure at the time, though, everybody was on board, like, oh my gosh, this is, we have no idea what's happening next. So you could throw anything at the wall and maybe read. And again, I don't have any reviews on this from back in the day, but I would assume that readers would be like, yes, I'm eating this up because this ties into that big 12 issue thing that's going on. And, oh, this is awesome. But in hindsight, it's like, it's kind of a mess.
The thing about the crisis is there's actually a recurring theme of that era called the Red Skies crossover.
Yeah.
And this issue at least earns the big bumper on the actual cover by being a crisis crossover. It's not essential to the crisis, but the crisis is essential to it. There are a few issues that get this. Specifically, I remember a Blue Devil issue where the only thing that marked it as a crisis crossover was the fact that in one scene you see that the sky is red because the Crisis on Infinite Earths came with red skies. But this one is kind of a different beast. And I feel like, again, the crisis is in this rather than this being in the crisis. That actually, to me, also kind of explains the reason why this issue exists. It's, hey, how do we explain this? How do we fix this? Has anyone noticed there's a crisis going on, Waka Waka? Because you would expect the Legionnaires to notice that one of their members, or at least their ancillary members, died and, you know, bit the big Twinkie 6 months ago. And then, of course, the death of Supergirl, which is a major, major undertaking, comes up. And, of course, the Legion is like, well, yeah, that also sort of happened. So I feel like in concept, the crisis was set up and, you know, mechanically was set up to where each writer could do what they want to do something with it. But by the time you get to the end, you really are at the mercy of what editorial and, you know, Wolfman and Perez are doing in Crisis. And so
at one time I attempted to go through the maxi series and then all of the tie-in issues that came out during this time period.
And it was madness, bro.
It was just so by a thread tied kind of thing.
Yeah.
Today, when we have these big mega crossovers where, you know, Ultimate Invasion of impacts every title and you have to read every title to understand what's going on, it's because they're like, well, here's what's going on in Daredevil. That one ends. And to pick up the next part of the story, you have to go read Luke Cage. And then the next part of that story can be read in Ultimate Invasion number 2. And then you have to go and read Spider-Woman because the stories just continue through that as if they were one big series. This is one that I honestly think that if I were reading Legion and Crisis at the same time back in the day, I'm not sure that I would be satisfied with that explanation. And then the minute that they got rid of the Infinite Man and got Jackson back, I think immediately at that point, I mean, the skies are pinkish red throughout this issue. But I think instantly at that point, you should start seeing more worlds than just Takran Galios starting to disintegrate. We should see, you know, that big wave just starting to come across Earth at the exact same time that it's happening in the other books. Because time's not linear, people, and things are instantaneous. And so I think that's where this gets messed up. I think that's where this gets mixed up. No, it's true. Time is not linear. Time is a construct.
Stop it.
Nope.
We are talking about theoretical constructs, and the theories do vary. And just because you have a specific one that you like best doesn't necessarily mean that that's the one.
No, even in Back to the Future, it's a linear concept, and that's not
how it will work. Fictional stories.
I know, but again, it still doesn't make sense. It still is like, oh, okay, we've taken care of this. Instantly, the world should be collapsing, but instead we get a whole epilogue where we go and see Dr. Jim, who's just like, pay me more money or I'm not going to take care of you kids. And it's like, okay, shouldn't you be now more involved in the crisis? Or was that the point where, phew, we've explained it here, but now everything is okay?
Well, we've definitely sort of touched on the crisis. There's more crisis coming, so don't be too upset with that. But it's also worth noting that this book came out week 2 of September in 85. The death of Supergirl was July 4th. It was first week of July. So this is almost 90 days after the death of Supergirl, Which does make me wonder if this was actually written after the fact. If it was something where
this issue might have, but the whole girl. I know, but the whole thing is we've seen Brainiac already trying to react to the death of Supergirl prior to this issue, and we've seen Scissor Girl
putting in like the forward thinking sort of.
And we've already seen Scissor Girl make her appearance before the death of Supergirl. So this all seems like that part was thought out, but this issue doesn't feel thought out in my opinion. So there you go.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
Matthew, have you watched the DC animated movie Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 1?
I have not, and that is part of my official policy of I do not watch DC animated movies unless they pop up on cable, which has happened. I don't know. I have this thing about adaptations, and I feel like exposing myself to something that's just going to have me ranting about adaptations isn't really going to be anything good for me. You know?
I don't think there's a problem with adaptations, especially if you're trying to adapt a big story like Crisis on Infinite Earth into some other form. There's an audiobook out there from Graphic Audio that I think has done really, really well as far as an adaptation of the Crisis on Infinite Earth story. I think that we've seen an adaptation of Crisis on Infinite Earths over in the Arrowverse on the CW, and I thought that one was okay. Mm-hmm. I generally like Sam Register. He's the head of DC Animation. I think he should have been the person that took over everything when the Discovery Warner Brothers merge happened, and not Zaslav. I think Sam Register would have been the perfect person. And I think that, and we haven't seen anything specific that is under the complete control of what's his name? Peacemaker's director, slipped my mind at the moment. We haven't seen with him in charge of DC films. We haven't seen anything come out. We've seen the work that he has done for DC, but we haven't seen with him in charge. I generally think that Sam Register is a very smart person when it comes to how do we curate these properties from a comic book into another form?
Mm-hmm.
That being said, Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 1 is a mess, a complete and utter mess from top to bottom. There is, save for this idea that something, and we don't know what the something is because it hasn't been revealed yet, save for something that is destroying the multiverse. This is a Flash story, top to bottom. It is, and it's not even the Flash where he runs so fast that he breaks into a million. Well, I guess he kind of does into that. But this is basically, hey, we have to build these huge sonic towers, which was a component in Crisis on Infinite Earth. But they're not fast enough to do it. So Barry takes Iris into the speed force, essentially, to where they are going so much faster than real time that they spend essentially 80 years sped up while the rest of the world around them is slowed down to microseconds so that they can finish the tower and try to keep the crisis at bay. And it is nothing like anything that you have ever read in the crisis. Part two looks like it could be interesting because all these heroes from different places have been gathered at the Nexus point with the monitor. And so that part is interesting, but no anti-monitor has been revealed. Supergirl is still alive. There was one little bit where Brainiac 5 shows up, but then technology breaks down because the worlds and timeline are being destroyed. But whoa, what a mess. I watched it and I was like, do I even want to continue to watch this, let alone check out part two? And I got to tell you, I don't know at this point. I really don't know. The only thing is in the trailers, the Batman Animated Universe characters show up. So the Justice League from the Batman Animated Universe, Terry McGinnis shows up. So that could be the interesting part. But oof, the rest of it. Big void, ladies and gentlemen. I've been generally pleased with a lot of the other DC animated movies that they've done. But this one, oof, what a dog. We'll be right back.
Legion of Superheroes, Volume 3, Number 19, published February 1986. No good deed goes unpunished. Written by Paul Levitz with art by Greg LaRocque and Larry Malstedt. Synopsis: can the Legionnaires destroy a planet to save the lives of a galaxy? And Freedom of Choice, written by Paul Levitz with art by Chuck Patton and Mike DiCarlo. Synopsis: when their powers go haywire, will a Legionnaire choose to give them up entirely?
When did Flash Vision become a power that Ultra Boy
Flash had? Vision has always been one of Ultra Boy's powers. That was actually one of the
specific powers.
In his first appearance, Ultra Boy's abilities were a little more vague, but Flash Vision was one of them. All of the powers that he actually showed in his first appearance were vision-based.
Mm.
And Flash Vision, which is...
I just don't remember Flash Vision.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Yeah, I just don't remember it being called that. And I'm just like, okay, well, I could see if it was like Superman's heat vision or X-ray vision or something like that. But remember that at all.
He calls it Flash Vision for two reasons. One, to differentiate himself from Superboy, but also because it is slightly more powerful than Superboy's. First of all, his Penetra Vision, which is his version of X-ray vision, right, can see through lead. Mon-El cannot do that, and Superboy cannot do that. So in the strictest sense, that is, in fact, the Penetra Vision is Ultra Boy's actual unique superpower. And the Penetra Vision in those early days was also kind of the way Superman had his heat vision and his X-ray vision kind of all rolling up into one. You use X-ray vision to look through things and then different types of radiation to melt it. The Flash Vision as a unique thing has been around for a while. And I want to say they actually do call it Flash Vision throughout the 70s now that I think about it.
Okay. So in the middle of a mission to save tsunami victims, members of the Legion just start disappearing. Pop, 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 pop.
I wonder if those Legionnaires who disappeared have anything in common.
I don't think so. There's no connection that they would ever have. That would be a pre-crisis event.
Story's over.
And
the interesting thing, though, the planet that's flooding is planet Mana 5.
Yeah.
And Mana 5 was the planet where Erg-1, Wildfire in his first guise, where Erg-1 did his Daffy Duck routine.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Phantom? Yeah, Phantom
I've
Girl.
I've got one power.
Colossal Boy. Yeah, I can only do it once. Phantom Girl, Chemical King, Colossal Boy, and Erg-1 were on Mana 5. And then Wildfire, Gerg-1. Blew up the thing, and of course now we return to Mana 5, as you said, you know, the greatest hits of the Legion. And I do like, in the context of the secret background stories that are bubbling, that return to Mana 5, because it does later in the issue bring up an important point. Because Sensor Girl.
Yeah, Supergirl in disguise. Yeah.
No. She's pretty super. But Sensor Girl is like, I cannot tell you about my powers. And Wildfire, who kept his powers secret until the Mana 5 mission, is like, you can't keep your powers secret and join the Legion, you big stupid. Proving once and for all that, if nothing else, Wildfire is a giant hypocrite.
Oh, yeah, they all are. They all are.
Wildfire's the worst.
Then all of a sudden, a controller shows up, and he's like, I'm not the controller you know, but I am a controller, not the controller, and I have taken your companions because they have done me wrong. Do not interfere. And then he disappears.
They were out of control.
And we find out, and this is kind of interesting, that it's been probably about a year, I guess.
It's issue 7 or 8, I want to say.
Yeah, so it's been about, it feels like a year. But we remember that these were members of the Legion who were involved in stopping the Sun Eater and destroying that lab. Remember that crazy giant double page spread where they're going in there and it's like, there's a Sun Eater in here. And the controller
Sun Eaters.
And we're like, oh, controller bad, because controllers are creating Sun Eaters, which are destroying things. And then the controller brings the Legion members here and he's like, I want to show you what you hath wrought. And then he's like, oh, here's essentially a war planet that is coming. And the only thing that could have stopped the war planet was a Sun Eater. But now, because I couldn't unleash the Sun Eater on these guys, it's going to come through your part of the galaxy and just destroy everything. Observe. And then the planet destroys everything.
Yeah, the planet Tiraz. Mm-hmm. Tiraz. I wonder if we know anybody who might be from Tiraz.
I don't know. They all look like demon dudes. So I don't know of anybody who might be from Tiraz.
They actually look a little bit, but one guy that we see with the gun arm looks remarkably like sort of a Mr. T. But Tyr of the Legion of Supervillains, you remember Tyr? Big guy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Red skin for the thing.
Yeah.
He had appeared twice, actually, before joining the Legion of Supervillains in the last 10 issues or so.
Mm-hmm.
He appeared once in like 1970 and then was gone for 15 years.
Yeah, I think they got him. I think they took him down in like one issue or something. And he's like, I'm big and bad. And then they punched him. He's like, oh, please stop.
They punched him in 197, but his gun hand flew out into space and then came back.
And then raised Skywalker
in 199.
Found it and brought it back to him. Yeah.
And they fought and they fought and they fought. But Tyr was a member of the Legion of Supervillains a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
I firmly believe that they only put him in the Legion of Supervillains so that they could tell this story. I feel like this is reverse engineered. We want to bring in Tyr's War World.
I don't think they're thinking that. I don't think they're thinking that far ahead, to be honest.
I bet they are.
I would be really surprised if they did. I think they're looking for, oh, isn't this convenient? And it just so happens to, we can use that here and make it look like we plan this stuff out all along.
It's too bad we don't remember last issue with the Infinite Man, because I feel like
it's slipping away.
Yeah.
So anyway, they decide that, oh, we can take this on. But instead of the controller just saying, hey, all Legionnaires, he's only just taking the five that were responsible for the Sun Eater, which doesn't make a lot of sense. You'd think that if the controller really wants them to stop this war planet, that he would bring everybody on board.
I feel like he's a jerk.
Oh, yeah, of course. All controllers are jerks.
He's literally trying to punish the five that killed his pet Sun Eater, who I believe was named Mr. Spot. But, yeah, I kind of agree with you on that point. But it also narratively is really cute, because these five Legionnaires were barely able to figure out a way to defeat that Sun Eater. And now they have to figure out a way to non-defeat that Sun Eater, or rather defeat the thing that Sun Eater was created to defeat.
Ultra Boy can replicate. He's not like Rogue, where he can replicate anybody's powers. He just has a set of powers that he can trigger one at a time.
Mon-El is a Daxamite.
I'm talking about
Ultra Boy has ultra energy that he can basically put into any one body system. So he can put it into his senses, or he can put it into his speed or his strength or his invulnerability.
So he couldn't say, for example, go supernova and just blow up this planet and then return to normal.
No, he wouldn't be able to do that unless, I mean, theoretically, I suppose you could take your energy and just go pew, 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 but he has never done it. Let's put it that way. He basically can replicate essentially Kryptonian level powers. If you basically think, what powers does a guy have? He can be a super guy. So he can run, and he can run really fast. He can jump, and then he can fly, or he can get hit with a stick, or he can get hit with a really big stick. So yeah, he's infused with energy that he got inside of a whale.
Like you do. But we're never going to find out if they're going to defeat the mortal engines. Oh, by the way, there is a whole book series called The Mortal Engines, where city nations all become mobile and they run by destroying other city nations. So like London is this big city nation that runs on this like big, I don't know, like treadmill or something. And it's going across the earth, devouring other cities, like maybe Istanbul. And it's going to devour it for all its resources to burn. And that's kind of what Tiraz feels like, is a mortal engine. So As we look at
the Mortal Engine came out in 2001.
I know, that's so what I'm saying. It's like if we're looking at things that have been influenced, I wonder if Tiraz in any way, shape, or form influenced Mortal Engines or not.
It could. I mean, there are other living city stories that I can think of, but I imagine that just having that giant planet coming around and being a traveling planet that's going to eat things.
Oh, yeah. There was a Doctor Who story that was the same thing, too, that they've done that before back in the 70s or 80s with the
and
Fourth
Mongol
Doctor.
Mongol had his war world back in 78, which is very similar to Tiraz.
Yeah. But we're never going to find out because this story is super short. And instead, we have to go into a backup story where Dr. Jim is like, hey, I can take away part of your powers or all of your powers, Invisible Kid, or you can just stay the way you are. My advice is to get rid of all your powers. And it just feels like this story about Invisible Kid getting rid of his powers or keeping part of his powers or whatever seems a little too late, in my opinion.
Honestly, I agree with you. And the reason that I agree with you is that, first of all, when it's initially played up, when it comes up, it was right about the time of the Great Darkness, which seems like a million years ago now. But if you go and you actually look at that story, and I think it starts in something like issue 297, Legion 297 back in the day, you really are looking at a story where that was like late 1982. And now we're at the point where we're nearing the end of, I think, 1986 almost. It's been just this plot that hasn't gone anywhere and hasn't done anything. He killed that Kund like, what, a year and a half ago now?
It feels like a while ago with his teleportation powers.
Yeah, and it really does feel like if he makes a decision to just delete his teleportation power, first of all, A, you really are you're denying the team a very powerful ability that you could theoretically learn how to use if you weren't being a jerk.
Yeah.
And secondly, it makes the whole thing, this, you know, 3 or 4 year arc, feel like a pointless nonsense.
Well, and here's the other thing is, they could have just ignored his teleportation powers, just like the Legion has ignored the existence of Tyrok or Kid Psycho. It's just like we're ignoring all of these things that have ever happened and no one seems to care. I honestly feel that if they were just like, hey, Invisible Kid, turn invisible. Okay, mon ami. And he's just invisible and they never bring up his teleportation powers again. I think no one would ever question it.
I feel like there was a point here, and I feel like thinking in terms of Bronze Age storytelling and Bronze Age creators, I feel like the subversion of the regular story point here is the point. I feel like having Invisible Kid get a powerful, useful superpower in addition to his ability to turn invisible and his really cool red vest that he stole from the Wiggles, you have this, oh, he could do something, he could be more powerful, but it's also dangerous. And maybe somebody needs to make a decision and, you know, do something safe, do something that is cautious and smart, because he did kill a person. Well, I mean, a Kund, but he killed a character in the book with his powers. And from the perspective of Paul Levitz, who's trying to tell stories and be like, ooh, look at this cool new story I'm telling, I can see wanting Invisible Kid to give up his power and have it feel something new or different. And it maybe even give him some agency, because he's making a decision. He's saying, these are the powers that I have. These are the powers I'm going to keep of my own free will. Because he got his powers by accident in the middle of a crisis moment, and he's kind of been on the sidelines of the Legion for 4 years now, and kind of putting him in the center of things really does feel useful. It feels important, but it also feels like a story that just kind of goes...
Yeah, it should have happened a long time ago. Also, if you're wondering if there's anything else in this story that is important... This is a diehard movie plot where a gang of people get on board the space station looking for one thing, but they're really just doing a bank heist, and it's okay, but I don't know. It's very thin.
Out space Hans Gruber.
Yeah, at no point does Invisible Kid say, "Now I have a frap gun too." Ho ho ho.
But he does say, "He goes nowhere, thieves, nor do you."
That wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Matthew, what did we learn this week?
We learned that Chuck Patton draws himself a really good Legion, but for some reason, Block looks weird when drawn by Greg LaRocque.
I think we also learned that just because it's a tie-in issue to the Crisis doesn't mean it actually does anything to explain the Crisis or what's going on.
And I think most importantly, we learned hashtag time travel shenanigans.
Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. If you have any questions, comments, whatever, drop us an email, podcast@majorspoilers.com. Check out our Patreon page where you can keep this show going far into the future, maybe far enough into the future that we will actually live long enough to see the timeline that the Legion occupies 1,000 years from now. We can only do it with your help, patreon.com/majorspoilers. So until next time, I am, what was the name of that kid again, man?
And I'm Kid Maestro.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2024 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.